Harold Ross was the first editor of The New Yorker, and he called it a comic weekly. 78 years later, The New Yorker is still not Archie. But over the years, the magazine has been home base for succeeding generations of humorists, including James Thurber, Robert Benchley, Dorothy Parker, and Groucho Marx, Woody Allen, and Steve Martin. Sunday, some of The New Yorker's current humorists will gather to discuss the magazine's comic legacy and future as part of the New Yorker Festival that's being held in New York. We're joined by two of those participants. Paul Rudnick has written and produced the screenplays to Adam's Family Values and In and Out, which, of course, is a controversial comedy in which the main character comes to terms with being gay. Paul Rudnick joins us from New York. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And Susan Orlean is the author of The Orchid Thief and The Bullfighter Checks Her Makeup, My Encounters with Extraordinary People. She joins us from member station WBUR in Boston. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And if we could begin with you, Mr. Rudnick, then Susan Orlean. Is it daunting to become known as a humor writer who appears in The New Yorker, given some of the people who preceded you?
Oh, incredibly. But I guess I always think of a story that Wendy Wasserstein once told me. At the beginning of her career, she was at a glamorous dinner party on the Upper East Side, maybe at Elaine's, and she was introduced to a very esteemed table of writers as the funniest girl in New York. And she told me that her only response was to vomit. So I thought you just can't think about who's gone before and who's beside you because it's too daunting.
Yeah. Susan Orlean?
Terrifying. It's actually the scariest thing I've ever done. I'd been working at The New Yorker for quite a while before I attempted my first humor piece, and there's nothing scarier and more subjective, of course, but turning in that piece and wanting to sit there and watch my editor's face and see if there was going to be any flicker of a smile when you're coming on the heels of, say, James Thurber, whose hallway sketches are still in the New Yorker offices, and you just think, how could I even consider myself worthy of trying? Don't you think, Paul?
I'm intimidated by people who actually do research for what they do. I think sometimes humor is the lazy way out. But it is tough, although I guess I also do a lot of work in the theater, and there you have a live audience, so you're kind of right in the arena, and it's either funny or it isn't. Mm-hmm. When you're writing humor in magazines or in books, at least you have the sort of cherished illusion that somewhere out there someone is chuckling madly.
Paul Rudnick, you wrote the screenplay for In and Out.
Yes.
A wonderful Kevin Kline film.
Oh, thank you.
And there was a time, I suppose all of us can recall, when anything like that wouldn't be considered fodder for humor. Are there things that strike you as being off bounds these days?
Oh, my God. It's interesting. It's this season. There are going to be a number of plays that deal with 9/11, but all often from some sort of comic perspective. And so it feels like, okay, I guess enough time has gone by. But there's, I don't know if ultimately, I guess, especially with comic writers, there's such a constant hunger for material. And there's an immediate rebellious comic response, I think, to anything that's hideously sad and depressing as to, okay, let's find a way of making this funny, either as a form of salvation or as just a clear anarchic response.
Susan?
After 9/11, I thought we finally have figured something out that cannot be funny. And then I thought, boy, there's a whole school of Holocaust jokes. And if we've been able at some point to find humor in the Holocaust, we're likely to find some way of bringing some comic perspective to 9/11.
I should point out that for a lot of people who don't read The New Yorker, and I dare say even for some people who do, there is still nothing funny about Holocaust jokes.
I can't believe that. I mean, there are great jokes about everything.
I'm thinking in the famous Zero Mostel line that Romanian Jewish food has killed more Jews than Hitler. That's kind of a Holocaust joke, but there are people then who will refuse to laugh at that.
Actually, I mean, I can't imagine things that comedy that no one objects to usually isn't all that funny. That would get it awfully vanilla.
Are the days gone at The New Yorker when the people writing humor all go out for lunch at the Algonquin?
I would say yes. I think those days are over.
But I guess I like to think that there's still some sort of incomparably witty, you know, jovially competitive roundtable going on somewhere, and that I'm just not invited. That maybe that's the new New Yorker style.
Have each of you brought a short passage of comic writing that you admire?
Well, I brought a piece of comic writing that I wrote called Nice Doggy. The other day, my Welsh Springer Spaniel, Cooper, gave me a manicure. He doesn't give the world's best manicure. For that, you have to go to the Korean joint, Nuclear Nails, or whatever it's called, on Broadway. But he really tries. He can tell whether I'm in the mood to have my cuticles cut or just pushed back. And it was actually his idea to wear a little white uniform. He can just sense that it makes me more comfortable to have a professional atmosphere whenever I'm getting personal services. And you know how every time you get a manicure, you immediately remember something you need in your handbag? And how if you put your hand in your bag to get it, you wreck your nails? Cooper knows how frustrating that is to me, so as soon as he's done with my top coat, he goes over to my handbag, empties the contents, and separates everything into little piles so that I can get whatever I need without making a dent in my polish. Look, I know he's not perfect. He ate an entire pumpkin pie at Thanksgiving while I was at a performance of Phantom. He engages in retributive vomiting when he's left alone for more than 4 hours. He can, at times, smell. But in terms of totally grokking my emotions, he's off the charts. You know, some of the most brilliant humor pieces were Thurber's dog pieces, The Night the Bed Fell on Father, that involves a vicious dog that the father used to bean with grapefruits and so forth. So it comes out of a tradition, I think, of dog humor, at which I'm proud to join.
Hmm. Paul, you brought something too?
I have. I brought something odd because I was thinking about this. And then when I woke up this morning and read the New York Times, I realized that the New York Times has become the nation's most prominent comic publication because there were so many items that were absolutely and deliciously ludicrous, starting with the story on the front page about the overweight Soviet ballerina who was booted out of the company because all of the male dancers refused to lift her. And one of them supposedly was hospitalized as a result. And I thought, that's a front page story today. So I thought, this sadly tops the New Yorker, but it's kind of classic. It was kind of a story where under the, you know, you can't make this up kind of thing.
Well, I want to thank you both very much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Paul Rudnick in New York and Susan Orlean in Boston. They are regular contributors to The New Yorker, of course, and participating in Sunday's roundtable on humor writing at the New Yorker Festival in New York City.